Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, you've got 83% of Americans believe in the afterlife. 83%, they're going to step up to the plate and they're going to say, yeah, I believe there's something rather than nothing. Something happens. I don't think it's all over when you die. And then you've got 72% of Americans that actually believe in heaven, but only 58%, how convenient, believe in hell. So most Americans believe in the afterlife, which means anytime you want to talk about death and dying in the afterlife, that is going to be, I would call it, fertile soil for gospel conversations and for spiritual conversations, because most people believe that it's there. And so if 8 out of 10 of your neighbors, coworkers, people you meet on the street or in a restaurant or on a vacation or a beach or wherever already believe in the afterlife, why would we not be willing to have that conversation? It is Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble on Call to Action Radio here with Dr. Jamie Dew, who's been on the show many times.
That's right.
And it's great to have you back, Jamie. Make sure you get the mic real close.
Got it.
That we can hear you really well.
All right. And
let's start off. We talked about this, but it's been a while since you were on, and we talked about the new prison ministry, the seminary in the prison.
That's right.
So let's do an update on that right quick.
So one semester in, first of all, thanks for having me back. We are one semester in. We had a great semester. Our average GPA for the starting class, which we started with 30 students, and our average GPA, I think, was 3.8 for the semester.
Wow.
So we are very proud of our students there at Nash. And we're into our second semester. They're much more confident this time of the semester than they were this time last semester, because they've done things. And of course, you know, it came with all the growing pains that you would expect. These folks, for the most part, generally speaking, really don't have any type of preparation that suits them for what they're doing here. But at the same time, they compensate for that with a very, very strong work ethic, and they've done very well. So now that they've got a semester under their belt, they've done very well. They've seen that they can cut the mustard. They outperformed my campus students with their GPA, which is
wow,
really cool.
That's so cool.
And so they're feeling much better, and they're really liking what they're doing now. So it's been a great semester.
That's such a great story. So we're talking to Jamie Dew, who's out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, not just a professor, but also a history of ideas. But you're also still the dean of the college.
That's right.
At Southeastern. And Southeastern here in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Wake Forest, North Carolina, basically launched a seminary inside the prison system. We talked about that last year, so that's super exciting. Mm-hmm. And today, as we're unpacking this, and every Thursday when I've got different people from the seminary on, I always kind of throw the ball in your court to see what you want to talk about. And you brought up this subject of death and dying in the afterlife.
Right.
And I want people to understand the context of this that maybe didn't hear you the last time you were on, because this is something that's a little bit closer and a little bit more to the center of your wheelhouse than the rest of us.
That's right. So, people ask me all the time, why am I so interested in death? And I tell them it's because I'm really creepy or something like that. And no, I hope that that's not true, that I'm creepy. But no, this is something that's close to home for me. I think in a lot of ways, my interest in it stemmed back to just a general time where I was like everybody else, just want to live forever. And then I started pastoring, and I did a lot of funerals over the 10 years that I was a pastor. I probably did somewhere around 60 funerals total. I was around death a lot. I spent a lot of times at the funeral home. I was with people when they died. And, you know, you do that type of stuff enough, and it's something that really can haunt you in ways. And for me, it did for certain seasons of my life. And so I tell people all the time, my first round of academics came because I was struggling with the existence of God. The second round of academics came really because I was really wrestling with death and the possibility of life after death. And so I wanted to be able to do work and demonstrate that it's logical, it's reasonable for us to believe, as we do, as Christians, that we really can survive our death. And so that work, that concern for death, took me into the major area of my academic research, and that is the nature of a human person. What is a human person? Are you a body? Are you a soul? Are you a body and a soul? And that's really where I've been doing my work for the last 8 years now.
Yeah, and then, of course, and we don't have to talk about this a whole lot, but obviously not that long ago, with some health challenges in your own life,
right?
You came face-to-face with death a lot sooner than most of us do. You're a young guy.
Yeah.
And tell us about that real quick, if you don't
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, so it was a little over a year now. It's been about a year and a week ago. I woke up one Saturday morning just to go use the bathroom, and I'll spare our radio audience all the gory details of it, but I started hemorrhaging, and I thought I was just having diarrhea or something like that. But instead, I was just pouring blood. And so rushed to the hospital, in and out of the hospital over the course of a couple of days. And it culminated with me spending about 5 or 6 days in ICU. I had 12 units of blood that was given to me. I almost bled to death. And then I got infections. I had to have 15 inches of my large intestine removed. And so I came pretty close to death in the middle of that a couple times. Yeah. And it's really interesting. Death has always bothered me. You know, we hear people say things all the time, for example, like, well, it's natural. No, it's not. People say, well, you're not supposed to live forever. And I say, yes, you are. Yeah, yeah. God didn't make us to die, man. Yeah. He made us to live. And so with that in mind, death has always just bothered me. But in that experience last year, I mean, I'd say to people, and I mean this, I wasn't comfortable talking about this at first. I'm a lot more comfortable talking about it now.
Sure.
But in those moments when death was really close, and I was acutely aware of the fact that, you know, I'm about to die here.
Yeah.
And yet in the midst of all that, I wasn't one bit afraid. And it wasn't because I'm just super, super awesome as a Christian. Steve, I sensed a very real closeness of God in that moment, that he was near. And that was enough. I didn't need an argument. I didn't need a Bible verse. I didn't need a doctrine. I sensed that
you didn't
Christ.
Need a preacher.
I didn't need any of that. I couldn't pray because I didn't realize what would happen to you. When you lose that much blood, it's amazing what happens to your body, your mind. I mean, I was a hamburger. I couldn't put together a coherent sentence, so much less pray. And yet in that moment, I could sense, as real as you and me in this room, in fact, more real than anything else that was going on, just this overriding sense that he's near and things are going to be okay.
That's so comforting because, I became a follower of Christ back in 1994. I'm well studied. I've been down this road for a while, and death's the same thing. I was like, you know, how am I going to handle it when it comes?
Right.
You hear all kinds of stories. You hear a testimony like yours, and I believe by faith that when that moment comes, I'm going to be closer to the Lord perhaps then than I ever have been.
Yeah.
And he's gonna be there to take care of you and walk you through it.
Yeah, I told somebody, one of my close friends afterwards, I said, I feel like I have a sense now of what happens.
Yeah.
That when that time comes, Christ meets you right there, and he'll take it from there.
So comforting. We'll come back. We're going to talk about what does Christianity say about life after death and the intermediate state? What about bodily resurrection? What happens immediately when you die? Because there's the judgment day. There's the judgment seat of Christ. There's you come back, you go there. I mean, where do you start? How does all this work? The afterlife with Dr. Jamie Du. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for? A message in the sky.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. One of my favorite days every week is Thursday, Theology Thursday, with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. I live in Raleigh. This is in Wake Forest, which is a suburb of the Raleigh area. But Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary is the biggest seminary on the East Coast, one of the preeminent seminaries on the planet. We've been doing Theology Thursdays for about 4 years now. It's been a huge blessing to me personally, and I know it's one of our audiences. Jamie, I know it's one of their favorite days of the week. People love Theology Thursday because God, through this technology, gives us access to people that are so learned and so wise, not the least of which, obviously, is you. And Danny Aiken is on once a month, which has just been a huge blessing. I really appreciate it. I know how busy all you guys are, so it's always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Our pleasure, man. We're excited to be here.
It's always great. And so for those of you that are newer to the show, and we've just added some new friends up in northern Minnesota, Hawaii's coming on in the next couple of weeks. We're talking to Las Vegas and a couple other places. So God's really starting to expand the reach of the show, which is exciting. So we're excited to share you guys with other people around the country. And we're talking about death and the afterlife. A lot of common questions. We're going to look at it theologically now. And what does Christianity say about life after death? I've got some great questions coming in from some of our friends on Facebook Live. And by the way, if you want to join us on Facebook Live, you kind of look into the studio here. We're just at facebook.com/C2A Radio, which is the landing page for our Facebook world there. So just look it up, C2A Radio. That's the letter C, the number 2, the letter A, and you can join us. And if you're listening on a delayed basis or wherever you're at, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, we're right here live on Facebook. But so let's talk about what is Christianity. You know, most of us are Christians. We're people of the book. So what does the book tell us about life after death?
So, you know, I do a lot of work in this area where people will give accounts of life after death, or what we call postmortem survival. And sometimes you get treatments of this question where it will try to suggest a way forward that really only answers what I think to be one component of Christianity. Yeah. I actually think that there are two major kinds of ideas about what the nuts and bolts of it. First of all, there's a let me divide our existence into three phases, if I can. There's our phase or mode of existence right now where we're embodied, right? We'll call it phase one. Phase two is, biblically speaking, we refer to it as the intermediate state, and that's that moment right after we die when we separate from this body. The body soul separates from each other, and the soul goes to be in the presence of Christ. And we have a number of passages of Scripture that speak about that. Jesus speaks to the thief on the cross, "Today you'll be with me in paradise," and yet his body's in the ground. Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and things like that. So clearly this is a disembodied state where something about us is still there, yeah, and we take that to be the soul. We call that the intermediate state. That's the second phase. Then there's this third phase, and that third phase is bodily resurrection. Honestly, Steve, I think in our preaching and our teaching on this, most believers don't realize that Christianity entails something about this too. We talk about heaven as sort of this mushy afterlife.
Yeah, this whole ethereal out there, kind of blobbish, whatever.
That's right. So when Granny, for example, dies, we say, well, she's already there in heaven. Well, actually, heaven really seems to have these two phases. There's this intermediate stage, and then there's this stage when Christ himself returns. He raises the dead from the grave, so the very bodies that we've stood over in the cemetery, weeping over, praying over, those bodies are restored to life again. They're re-ensouled. The soul is reunited to them again. And then we're told that
all
we live. That's right. That's right. Good and bad.
Right. Heaven and hell.
That's right. And then we're told that we live embodied again forevermore. So I think when it comes to a Christian account of life after death, you really have to make clear that there's two types of things we have to keep in view. Number one, there's the intermediate state of disembodied existence where our soul is in the presence of Christ. And then number two, there's the bodily resurrection of the dead when our bodies will be raised, re-ensouled, and dwell in the presence of Christ if we're in heaven, or separated forever in hell in judgment.
Well, I was going to ask you, and I told you this right before you got here. I took a Survey Monkey survey all about the afterlife and the soul. Some fascinating questions. How old do you think the soul is? Mm-hmm. What happens to babies that you know, if you have a miscarriage or abortion? Just some really fascinating questions. And some of them I hadn't thought of. How old is my soul? And I'm sitting there going, well, hold on a second. The Scripture talks about before the foundation of the earth, God knew who I was. And so how does the Bible handle kind of this whole notion of the soul? And then we'll talk about, next we'll go to, okay, what happens right when you die?
Yeah, so that interesting question of how old is the soul, I think the right answer to that biblically would be, well, however old you are. So I don't think that Christianity teaches that our souls were pre-existent prior to our embodiment.
Unlike Mormonism.
Unlike Mormonism or Platonism. So Plato had this idea, and Plato in the Phaedo, one of his works, he makes three really robust arguments for the existence of the soul. And I tell my students, unfortunately, I think that all of those arguments are out of bounds for us as Christians because they assume an eternal soul.
Yeah.
And Plato had this idea per Pythagoras and the Eastern side of our world of the transmigration of the soul. So we don't affirm any of that. We believe that our souls basically came into existence when our bodies came into existence. Now, the debate in Christianity is over really the process for generating that soul. Is it directly created by God? That's a view called creationism, held by people like Thomas Aquinas. Or another view called traducianism, which basically says, no, souls are generated along with, in, and by the physical, biological process, sort of as a natural product.
So at conception, part of that pie, if you will, is the soul coming into existence.
On the traducian model, yes.
Got it. Okay.
And so that's really where the debate
is. Is that a hill we need to die on?
No, it's not at all. No. So
However, when we talk about, when does life begin?
That's right.
Which I did recently. I can't remember who was in here on Thursday. We talked about when does life begin. And then it is an issue because some people will say, well, right at conception, it doesn't have a soul. It's no big deal. Also, when you get into questions like artificial insemination, when you're twinning, when you're splitting embryos and stuff, at the earliest stage, it's really interesting there. But that's not really, from our perspective today, the afterlife and the soul, that's not a hill to die on, I would say.
No, I don't think so. And I think really whether you go the traducian model or the creationist model, you could really say that, and really I think the real question is not so much when life begins, because clearly it's biological right at the moment of fertilization. So that's life. The real question is, at what point is it a person? And I think that you could go in either direction, the Traducian model or the creationist model, and say it's a human person. So so the question of the soul, what the Bible says about this. Sometimes critics of the view sorry, I coughed there. Sometimes critics of the view that we have souls will argue that, well, that's a New Testament idea which is borrowing exclusively from Greek philosophy. So Paul, in other words, is just overly influenced by Greek philosophy. Well, as it turns out, Genesis chapter 3, which is not the New Testament, obviously, and obviously not influenced by Greek philosophy, Genesis chapter 3 talks about how God formed Adam's body out of the dust of the ground, breathed into it and into its nostrils the breath of life, and it became a living soul at that point. So I don't think you could say that's Greek influence. Furthermore, what about Ecclesiastes chapter 12? Ecclesiastes chapter 12 talks about when death happens. It says the body was returned up back to the ground where it came, building off of Genesis chapter 3, and that the spirit is returned back to God from where it comes from. So I think per Genesis 3 and Ecclesiastes chapter 12, you've clearly got Old Testament teachings about two kinds of stuff, body and soul. And then when we get to the New Testament, that distinction between body, soul is amplified. Paul talks about it. Peter talks about it. Jesus talks about it. We find plenty of material in the New Testament and the Old Testament to affirm that we have both of these, body and soul.
And so when we come back, we'll get into, I think, perhaps what's probably the most desired answer to talk about, what happens at the moment of death. My friend Wendy on Facebook Live just dropped a great quote in here from John Piper about what happens near the process of death. I want to share that one because that's so encouraging. Thanks, Wendy, for putting that in there. And we'll come back and we'll talk about what happens at that moment that you die. What happens? Where do you go? What do you experience? This is Steve Noble at Jamie Du. We'll be right back.
I love Maroon 5.
That's because you're cool.
Go for it. I love it. I mean,
and that's, you know, you sit there and we're talking to Dr. Jamie Du. Yes, this is a guy that's the dean of the college at Southeastern, as well as a seminary professor himself, PhD. How many PhDs do you have?
I have one. I'm finishing up a second.
Oh, you're working on it. Yeah, just because you're bored. People go, oh my, how can you say that? I mean, Adam Levine, blah, 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 blah. He's not even a believer, blah, blah, blah. And listen,
He can sing, though.
And the boy's got talent. He does. I'm really off on a tangent here for a second, but I'm going to go ahead and indulge it, you know, because I get to.
Yeah, go for it.
He did Howard Stern, of all people. Somebody did a birthday roast for the guy. So they bring Adam Levine in to do a Prince song, Purple Rain.
Okay.
And it was like Prince was doing it himself.
He is amazing.
Not only could he sing, but he was shredding his guitar. I mean, I listened to it, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So whether Adam Levine gives any glory to God for his talent, I know where his talent came from.
Right, that's right.
And so I can listen to good music, creative music, and yes, sometimes it gets trashed because the lyrics, Maroon 5 has some explicit lyrics.
They do.
And that time I'm like, there you are, you're just misusing the gift.
Yeah.
Where is it in Romans where it talks about things that done out of faith are sin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a problem for Adam.
Yeah.
But I can sit there and go, you know what, this is good music, and I know what the source of good music
is.
Right. I know the source of the lie and the garbage.
That's right.
But I can still enjoy good music because I think we're going to enjoy good music forever.
Yeah, that's right. Augustine talks about plundering the spoils of the Egyptians when the Exodus took place and the children of Israel came out.
Yeah.
They took the gold, the silver, the livestock, the treasures of Egypt. They plundered them. And really the idea is there that Augustine's making is all of that talent, all of that stuff, it may be misused as the Egyptians did, but ultimately it belongs to God.
Yeah, so take that, Sean Saunders, my buddy out there listening somewhere on the radio in the Triangle area just says, Steve, you're going to hell for liking Maroon 5. That was a text. You're not seeing one on Facebook Live. But Sean's, you know, he's kind of struggles with his fundy past, and so we're just going to shower him with grace. Even though he's condemning me, that's fine.
There you go.
So we're talking about life after death. It's Dr. Jamie Du is here on Theology Thursday from Southeastern Baptist. And now I think we're going to get to the part that people really have a lot of questions about and perhaps even struggle with is, okay, so I'm a believer, and we'll talk about people that are unbelievers too. At that moment of death, what happens? Because we know about Lazarus, and then we know about Paul, who was taken up into the third heaven. But what happens? What's the deal?
So there's a lot we don't know. 1 John chapter 3 talks about this, that it hasn't, it, I think John says, quote, "It has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." It's an amazing passage of scripture. What John starts off, and Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that we now see through a glass darkly, right? There is really a lot that we really don't know about this moment. But what we do seem to know is that in the moment right after death, our body and our soul separate from each other. The body stays here. Maybe it's destroyed in some way. Maybe it's buried or something along those lines. And that the soul goes back into the presence of God. We're told this in the Old Testament, as I was saying in the last segment from Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse numbers really 6 through 12 talks about this. You know, the New Testament says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So what happens, it looks like, is that our souls go to be directly in the presence of Christ. And so this is heaven.
If we're not saved, do they go directly into hell?
It seems as though basically what happens, there's a separation, so they wouldn't go into the presence of Christ. There is a separation, but even there, it seems as though this is a disembodied separation, right? So souls, the souls of us, the souls of persons still exist after that moment, and they are somewhere, believers in the presence of Christ. For non-believers, they are separated from him, but they're still somewhere. We take that to be in the presence of Satan and the fallen angels and those who weren't redeemed. And then in the eschaton, that's the Greek word for the end, right? So in the end of it all, in our eschatology, which is end time stuff, in the eschaton, Christ himself returns.
Right, amen.
And the bodies are raised, reunited to those bodies, and then there's judgment.
The final judgment.
The final judgment where we will go in one direction or the other for eternity.
Is there in the modern church world, is there a lot of differences in terms of what you're talking about right now, in terms of what happens right when you die right now? Christ hasn't come back. We're in that intermediate time. Is there uniformity or is there some differences?
I think that there is uniformity. For those, and I think really you could say this, well, with the exception of Catholics, of course, they believe in purgatory and some things like that. But in the evangelical world, the Protestant world, there really is uniformity amongst those who actually study this. Where the disformity comes from is either a lack of knowledge because of our mushy types of clumping together here. We clump the intermediate state and the final eschaton together as just bluntly heaven. So that happens. Or then there's disunity over from liberalism as well, those who want to deny all of this stuff.
Right.
Or endorse universalism or inclusivism or these other things where somehow everybody gets to go to heaven. So, you know, those types of exceptions notwithstanding, generally speaking, in the Protestant world, there's uniformity here.
Kim on Facebook Live asked a great question, which was, you know, going back to the thief on the cross when Jesus said, you know, verily, verily, I tell you, today you'll be with me in paradise. So is paradise heaven?
So again, we could use – what I want to say to everybody is that when we talk about heaven, that word heaven can really be used in two ways, okay? Think of it as heaven lowercase h maybe and then heaven capital H. Heaven capital H would be when Christ's work is complete, when everything he has promised he will do.
And all of creation
everything.
Is redeemed.
That's right. And that happens when he returns in the bodily resurrection.
And then heaven comes to earth.
That's right.
Which a lot of people don't even know that.
That's right. So then the small
– So if you think Hawaii is cool now,
yeah, that's
give
right.
it some time.
The small H, heaven, would be the intermediate state where we are in the presence of Christ. And I have to say – that's obviously glorious and good and wonderful. It has to be better than where we're at right now.
Sure.
But what I want to say to folks is, but even in that state, as good as that is, as glorious as he is, we ourselves are there still in a fallen state.
Yeah.
And people raise their eyebrows at me that
way. Yeah, I just did.
Well, you're not in your body. And didn't God create you to be in your body?
Right.
You are experiencing in the fullest degree at that moment the consequences of death and of sin. By being separated from your body, you're there yourself in the presence
of Christ.
Which
was not originally what his desire was.
That's right. He didn't create us to have this.
Because people
say,
you said this earlier when we started the show, and people say death is natural. And you say from a biblical perspective, from the truth perspective, it is not natural.
Yeah, it's the new norm.
Right.
But it's not natural if natural means what God intended to be the case.
And again, one of the reasons we're talking about this, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show on this Theology Thursday. From a Pew Research poll, 72% of people believe in heaven, 58% believe in hell, an overwhelming 83% of Americans believe in an afterlife. So this topic in and of itself is a great way to get into a spiritual conversation right. with 83% of the people you meet. They're already believing in an afterlife.
Right.
So that's now
right.
that's a really easy ramp for gospel conversation.
That's right. You
Super
just
important.
Start right there and then take off into what it is that we have to say about this. That's a really good way to go about that.
And so as we look at this, and one of my other friends, David, on Facebook Live asked, so do we kind of say soul and spirit? Are they synonymous? They're just two different words for the
you
same
know,
thing.
You know, one of the first times I was on your show, I don't think it was
yeah,
the first time.
Yeah, this was kind of deep. I remember
yeah,
this.
That's right. I remember we got into this, and I made some comments about this, and you remember I got skewered
yeah,
by one of your
I do remember that. Yeah,
he wrote a dissertation to me about this. So David Lloyd Jr., please do not skewer me over this. You know, generally speaking, there are two views.
He didn't skewer you before. Let's
he
make
didn't.
That clear.
It wasn't him. It wasn't him. But generally speaking, within the Protestant church, there are two views, trichotomy and dichotomy. Trichotomy does make the distinction between soul and spirit. Dichotomy does not. It says that they're synonyms. You know, at the end of the day, I guess I would lean more towards the dichotomous view and view those two terms as being synonymous
yeah,
with each other. But at the same time, if I got to heaven and it turned out there really are three parts, I don't think that really bothers me. My work has been really more focused on a more basic level where I'm trying to show that there's two kinds of stuff,
yeah.
physical stuff and non-physical stuff. So what I would argue is that even the trichotomist in that discussion is a dualist like me, where you say there's two kinds of stuff.
Right,
but
it.
I think they're synonyms.
So in terms of the intermediate, right after death, but before heaven comes to earth and Jesus returns and we are reunited with our bodies, what's that like? Is that the floating on the cloud thing, or does the Bible give us any indication of what that is like?
Yeah.
Because Jesus described it as paradise.
It doesn't, other than saying it's paradise and it's in his presence. And so, you know, sometimes little children will ask the question, well, Mommy, where is heaven? And the adult, the wise, all-knowing adult will say, oh, that's a silly question. Heaven's not in space. And I say to myself, well, wait a minute. Jesus himself is in a physical body as we speak. He was raised in his physical body. He ascended back up into
his physical body.
According to Orthodox Christianity, which is Protestantism, Catholicism, and the Orthodox faith, all of us agree that he's still embodied right now. So if our spirits, which in themselves are not physical, but our spirits are nonetheless with him wherever he is, since he's physical, I have to say that's somewhere
yeah.
within God's creation that yeah. they are. I don't know where that is. I have no clue. But I think that he himself is embodied and our souls go to be with him wherever that is in that state.
And again, the Bible is not explicit in this information.
Right.
And to me, that means it doesn't need to be.
That's right.
That's not required
That's
information.
Right. Again, it has not yet been revealed what we shall
right.
be.
Exactly. And the Bible does say that, and we need to be comfortable with that. We're talking to Dr. Jamie Du, talking about death and life after death. When we come back, a really interesting topic. Okay, so you die. What do you do with that body? Do you cremate? Mm. Is that a problem?
Yeah.
Should you be buried? What if you were completely destroyed in a plane crash? Some pretty interesting, gnarly stuff when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Theology Thursday, as it is every week with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you want to check that out, they've got all kinds of free online courses. I just met a new friend that recently got out of prison, and he was really hungry for the things of God. He's going to actually be on the show here in the near future because it's just miraculous what God has done in his life. And I'm like, dude, you got to go to Southeastern's website because there's a whole page full of free online open courses that you can access. I told them to start with hermeneutics, which is really Danny Aiken's course on how do you actually and properly and accurately study the Bible. And that information, it's just unbelievable teaching that you can do at your own speed and your own time. And in this case, that's not something that costs you anything. So just get to the website, sebts.edu, and you can check that out for yourself. Just a quick reminder about one of our other great partners on the show, MediShare. A lot of you have heard about them. They've been around since 1993. It's a ministry. It's a not-for-profit ministry as a way to kind of deal with your health care. So since 1993, over $1 billion, billion dollars shared by fellow Christians around the country. Over 300,000 of us now. I say us because my family and I have been part of MediShare for about 6 years now. We've saved the average person saves about $500 a month. We've literally saved thousands of dollars every year. It puts you more in control of how you spend your healthcare money, which will make you more responsible and less of a wimp. Because you won't run to the doctor every time you got a stuffy nose because you pay for those little things. So you really it's really been a huge blessing for us. I hope you'll check it out for you and your family. 855-BIBLE-11 is their phone number, 855 Bible 11, talking to Jamie Du, and kind of turning the corner here as we talk about death and the afterlife and something that we all, have had to deal with it already. And sooner or later, should the Lord tarry, we're all going to have to deal with it for ourselves and for our loved ones. And it's the whole issue of, what do we do with this body that dies, and we'll get it back one day when Jesus returns? But in the meantime, how do we approach what to do with this old tent?
Hey, first, I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
You know, I've been on this show a lot of times, and I don't
Why
have a
don't
t-shirt.
You have a T-shirt?
I don't have a T-shirt.
You'll get a T-shirt next week.
All right. Awesome. So I think this is, yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road in a lot of ways, for loved ones at least, right? So for ourselves, what happens at death is more of a personal thing. But for our loved ones that are behind and remain, we've got to figure out what we do now. You know, a lot of Christians oppose cremation, and their reasons often revolve around the whole notion of bodily resurrection, that if you destroy the body with cremation, then there's nothing left for God to restore. I don't think that's the issue. I will say that in defense of those who cremate. Surely God can do something here. After all, we've had millions and millions and millions of people throughout history whose bodies do not exist anymore.
Right, right.
I'm talking no bones, no teeth, no
nothing.
They're gone. And yet we believe that God is going to raise them up. So if God can do that, I think he can overcome our cremation as well. So I don't think that's the reason to have concern here. As a pastor, I never wanted to take a hard line on this and say, don't do this. Because, again, I know that God can raise them back up. And I also know that, look, the average cost of a funeral
days,
it's $13,000 to $15,000. Yeah. So a casket's going to be $4,500. The vault's going to be $4,500. And then you've got all the services tacked onto that. It's a very expensive thing to bury someone.
Yeah, and it costs as much to bury me as it does to marry me.
That, yeah, that's right.
And crazy.
So for a lot of people, they just don't have that luxury.
Yeah, they don't have the money.
So you can cremate somebody for $1,500, $2,000, or something like that. And so, you know, understanding those real-life concerns, I think as a pastor, you have to be a little bit more sensitive and understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
What I always urge people to do, though, is to say, hey, listen, you have to understand that from a biblical perspective, theological perspective, the body is not a piece of trash or garbage now that the person is dead. And unfortunately, in many of the cases of cremation that I was around and saw, that was kind of how the body was treated. You know, the family stands around them. They take their last breath. They call the coroner and the funeral home. And then somebody shows up and kind of puts the body in a trash bag and hauls them off and burns them up. And I don't think that's right either. So having said that, I think it's understandable that the tradition of burying people has arisen within a Christian context, because we say that human persons are bodies and souls, that this body is sacred, right? It housed a human being for the years of its life. And also, I think that we have to remember that what we do with a body says something about what our hope is as well, right? In the Eastern world, that is, you know, the Hindus, the Buddhists, and all of those Eastern types of traditions, they would burn the bodies because they thought that the body was a bad thing. And by burning the body, you freed or liberated the spirit so that it could go off into the afterlife or something like that. But again, this is not a piece of garbage. It's not a prison. This is a good thing that God made and gave it life. And according to Christian theology, will again give it life. And so when we bury someone, and this is something only recently sort of come on my radar. I was telling you off the air that I've had a student from actually out in the Midwest write a paper here very recently where he talked a lot about this, and I just never thought about it before, but he's right. What we do in a funeral, or what we tend to do in a funeral, is we bury someone and it's a celebration of their life, which is past tense, right? We thank God, which is appropriate.
Sure, yeah.
We thank God for the life they have lived.
Honor that.
And then that's just it, right? We bury them. But a funeral should also, yes, it should celebrate the past and the gift that that person was, but a funeral is also a proclamation about the future as well. It's saying something about the future, and therefore a graveyard, a cemetery, that tomb there in the lawn, that is a proclamation piece,
that.
And so I think what churches really – what pastors and churches really need to do a better job – we've lost something in our culture, an artifact, if you will, that is now empty in our culture, right? We've just got headstones out in the middle of the front of the lawn.
Right.
And I mean, in the ancient world, you'd bury them not out in the yard. You'd bury them – like in Europe, when you go to these cathedrals – those folks were buried in the floor of the church, in the walls of the church. And then about a couple hundred years ago, we began moving them outside, out into the graveyard. And now notice what churches do. Churches don't even have graveyards anymore. They put them out in a public place. So again, it's not just cremation. Even in our burial practices, the idea that bodies are garbage to be removed is sort of taken over. And I think that we've got to re-envision this again, because historically speaking, there was a reason why the church put those headstones out there. There was a reason why the church put them in the wall. It was a piece of proclamation that Christ himself will return and this body will live again. And so all that to say, funerals, headstones, preach. And we've lost that in our culture. It's now just an empty artifact.
And I love that. I was going to ask you from a pastoral perspective and obviously a biblical theological perspective. I think we should, every believer should have, as part of their will or whatever, at my funeral, the gospel must be preached.
Right.
Yeah. So that, because you're going to have a mixed bag and just playing the numbers, probably the majority of every funeral, if you're just going to go by what Jesus said, few there are that go that way, there's going to be just a boatload of people that are lost.
That's right.
And that is some of the most fertile ground for the gospel.
Right. That's right.
And I think I'm serious. I think we should all have something written into our wills that says, when I die, I've got it in front of my Bible.
Yeah.
And as I said, if I live longer than Bishop Patrick Elwooden Sr., my black brother from another mother, if I die before he does,
he does the funeral.
He's doing my funeral.
So you're not inviting me. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. So I'll definitely die before you because you're so stinking young. But
I don't know.
But he will definitely. I pick the music. If he's alive, I want him to preach my funeral, because I know the gospel will be preached with authority and power and great exaltation.
That's right.
I think we all need to take it that seriously.
That's right. You know, and
I'm not patting myself on the back. This is just gospel imperative.
This is what we do. That's right. You never have a more captive audience, so to speak. And it's a moment where, look, funerals remind all of us of our own mortality. You know, a funeral is a reminder that my ship is sinking as well.
Yeah.
And at some point, this is me. And so why not take that? Obviously do it with class. Obviously don't be crude about it or anything else like that. You know, we can have dignity in the way we talk about these things, and we should. But this is an opportunity to really talk about Christ and the gospel and point them to it. I had an opportunity just this past week, or actually just 2 days ago, to do my Uncle Fred's funeral. Wow. And had an opportunity to share the gospel. And just reminded of this, that there really are people in the room in those moments that they need to hear Christ in that moment. And so we have to be good stewards of that. And I think, absolutely, let's write it down. Let's talk about it with our loved ones. If you put it in the will, unfortunately, that will be processed
probate
months later, you know. But put it in the front of your Bible. Talk to your wife about it. Talk to your kids about it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's great. And that's why we don't grieve as those who have no hope.
That's right.
And there's people there
that's right.
And that's fertile ground. That's such a wonderful thing to do. So really kind of encapsulating as we deal with these end-of-life questions and what to do with the body. Don't approach it as if it's nothing.
That's right.
But we're not going to go so far as to really condemn somebody
right.
if they go down this road.
Right.
And there are practical situations because it's so expensive to do it. But let's not just throw it out like it's some piece of junk because it isn't.
That's right. It is not a piece of garbage, right, if they're a financial fact. And so because of that, I think we should understand, and to the best of our abilities, I would suggest let's practice burial instead of cremation. But at the same time, if there are real financial factors, you know, there's something to be said. The idea is we let the body go back to the ground from where it comes from. And in some sense, cremation speeds that up. But, you know, I tell my wife, and there's laws that come into all this too, right? Every state has different laws. For example, in the state of North Carolina, you have to have a vault. You can't have just a casket. Mm. I wish North Carolina was different on that, but it's not. And so I tell my wife, well, look, you have to do certain things, but why don't you still put me in a wooden casket and put me in the ground and let nature take its course and then trust God that when the time comes, when his kingdom is coming now, he can raise me back
Amen.
Up as
That's
he
right.
sees fit.
Into glory.
That's right.
Which
That's
is
right.
so awesome.
Yeah.
Jamie, what a great, fascinating, and important topic. I'm so glad you brought it up. And I'm so glad that you had the time to come in and walk
Thanks.
Us through it.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Tomorrow, I'm lining this up. I think this is going to happen. I've got a friend who's a great friend, a great woman of God, a good supporter of the show, who goes to check this out, Jamie. She goes to the Sundance Film Festival every year.
Oh, wow.
Invades that darkness. There are some Christians there who she's worked worked with and done some ministry with. Talk about going into the middle of the lion's den.
Wow.
So I think my friend's going to be here tomorrow. Her name is Cindy. So hopefully that'll work out. She'll join us tomorrow. She'll take us into the world of the Sundance Film Festival, where most of us would never fear to tread. This is Steve Noble. It's Call to Action Radio. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.